Welcome to this podcast from the Medical Journal of Australia. My name is Sam Hunt, the MJA's news and online editor. Today we are discussing innovations in robotic-assisted surgery. My special guests are Professor David Gillett, who is a specialist urological surgeon and the Director of Medical Services at Macquarie University Hospital, and Professor Michael Wilson, who is a specialist cardiothoracic surgeon, also at Macquarie University Hospital, which sponsored this podcast. Professor Gillett, Professor Wilson, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for inviting me to take part.
Thanks very much for the opportunity.
Professor Gillett, I'll start with you. Why has urology led the way in robotic-assisted surgery?
Well, urology, which is the treatment of diseases of the urinary and genital tract, has always been innovative in new techniques. So the attractions about it, it's always had a mixture of open surgery and really from the 60s and before, telescopic surgery for lower urinary tract problems. It was a natural progression for urology to take on laparoscopy and then robotic surgery, because they are the surgeons who probably had skills in this area through the last three or four decades. Urology deals with diseases of the kidney, the bladder, the prostate, and they're organs that are ideal for actually approaching with a robotic laparoscopic approach. Confined in one area, defined operations to do that can be repeated, and technique developed. And for that reason, because of the urologist's long history with innovation, with their long history developing telescopic surgery of different sorts, and the particular conditions we deal with, urology was ideally placed to take on robotically assisted surgery.
And Professor Michael Wilson, I'll go to you now. You're a cardiothoracic surgeon. What cardiothoracic procedures are you currently doing robotically at Macquarie University Hospital?
So in cardiothoracics, there are three main streams of robotics. There's lung cancer surgery, where we do lobectomies or sublobar resections in a minimally invasive or keyhole fashion. There's coronary revascularization, where instead of doing a full sternotomy, we can do a robotic-assisted mammary harvest and then do the operation through a much smaller mini thoracotomy or anterolateral thoracotomy between the ribs just under the nipple, and avoiding a sternotomy, which is a much faster recovery and sometimes necessary if you've got other high risk factors for sternal wound infection. And then the last group is the structural heart procedures such as mitral valve, atrial septal defect, and we can do those robotically as well. So they end up with a small right thoracotomy under the pectoral muscle nipple area on the right chest. And there we have to use a heart-lung machine that's attached through the arteries and veins in the groin and the neck, so that they're on a peripheral bypass system while we operate on the arrested heart through a much smaller cut. So there are three sort of main areas for which robotics has a significant role.
And now I'll return to you, Professor Gillett. You must have seen so many changes in your career as a surgeon. How has surgery evolved with the help of robotics?
The equipment's changed enormously. When I trained, I'm so old now that I've actually practiced in five decades, almost. When I started, urology still had a fair amount of open surgery, old-fashioned scalpel and large holes in people. There was a fair amount of telescopic surgery in the bladder and the prostate, but the instruments weren't really refined enough to get into the kidneys easily, for example, with telescopes, or to the abdominal cavity. As my career progressed, we started getting better instrumentation, better optics, better lighting, to the point now we can get small instruments through the bladder up into the kidneys to deal with stones. We can deal with tumours in minimally invasive ways, and with the use of what's in some ways still relatively old-fashioned technology with lenses, we can actually introduce instruments into the body cavity with robot assistance, with less trauma, more precision, take out prostates, bladders, kidneys, and other organs with better patient outcomes and recovery, in my view.
And Professor Wilson, cardiothoracic surgeon, why would you choose to do a particular heart procedure robotically as opposed to more traditional approaches? is safety a factor?
Safety aspects are the pros and cons. Where you have a immunosuppressed patient, somebody who's had a laryngectomy, and there's extreme risk of sternal wound infection, then obviously staying right away from the sternum and not dividing bone, you have no risk of a sternal wound breakdown and sternal infection. The peripheral bypass is a risk, and it's very small. So comparatively, we go from a 1% stroke risk from a standard approach to a 2% stroke risk with peripheral bypass for a mitral or ASD. Now, the overall risk is still very small, only 2%, but I've had accountants say to me, no, you've just doubled my risk. There's no way I'll have the safest possible procedure. The corollary is that some people just are so anti having a sternal cut or sternotomy that they take even a much higher risk just to have avoid that procedure and have a smaller cut between the ribs that's cosmetically more acceptable and has a much earlier return to normal function, back to driving, working in 3 weeks instead of 6 to 12.
And Professor Gillett, this is a question for you. What about the benefits of robotic-assisted surgery compared to more traditional surgical approaches for the surgeon's well-being?
To start with, open surgery is quite demanding physically. If you're standing there in somebody's abdomen for 3 or 4 hours or 6 hours sometimes, it is quite physically demanding. Even when laparoscopy came in, the ergonomics were poor. You had to lean over to the patient often to take an organ out in strange positions. Robotics, you can sit at a console in a nice comfortable chair, a bit like playing an arcade game of some form. It's got its challenges still ergonomically, but certainly far more comfortable than laparoscopic or open surgery, both of which we still do, but just less frequently. And it has been a suggestion even that because of the better ergonomics, it may even increase the active life of a surgeon by a few years because they don't feel quite as exhausted by the time they're in their 50s and 60s as maybe they did do a few decades ago.
And Professor Wilson, in terms of cardiothoracic surgery, what are you seeing in terms of artificial intelligence now and the role that AI might play in the future?
I think that's a great area for collaboration between surgical imaging and the advanced processing of deep learning, machine learning and AI. So if you look at the driverless cars, that's still a work in progress. And we're playing in the same sort of area of having a visual operation where a proceduralist has to recognize specific anatomy, variations in the anatomy, and come up with immediate solutions to that. So I think having an autonomous surgeon is quite some way off. But having an augmented reality where you've got a system that can recognize anatomy, can reference the web, come up and display beside your augmented fields the solutions that were used and their 5 different cases of this particular variation, clearly enhances the surgery so that you have not only the experience of one operator, but you're able to reference the entire experience of the published literature. So I think developing these protocols where we keep as our library all the procedures we do to then be able to analyze and then train these AI programs to be able to recognize, augment and assist the procedures is certainly the way forward.
And Professor Gillett, with urological surgery, can you tell me about what kind of robotic assisted devices you're using and how much precision they give you?
The initial robotic surgery here was with a Da Vinci system, which came in about 10 years ago, slightly over. They've been around for about 15 worldwide, developed in the US, expensive technology. There are others now coming into this space. The Da Vinci system basically is used to operate in the abdominal and pelvic cavities. So it's largely urology, gynecology, and general surgery, sometimes in the chest and heart in a small number of people. The Versius is a British system that's similar. It's a different concept, but it's aimed at the same group of patients. But all these systems are designed to get for more precise surgery, for safer surgery, hopefully, and to, as you said, perhaps reduce some of the strain on the surgeons, but essentially the main aim is to reduce the strain on the patients to get better outcomes by better precision, less trauma. In other words, you make small holes rather than big holes in people, and they recover more quickly. So my feeling is it's changed the nature of surgery, and is still changing it from one where patients might have an open operation with a 6-inch scar, for example, and be in hospital for 10 days and probably take sometimes even 6 months to fully recover, but certainly some time to get recovered. Whereas with less invasive surgery, such as robotic surgery, the time taken for the surgery is probably similar, maybe occasionally a bit longer, maybe occasionally a bit quicker, but the recovery is quicker to the point that patients can be out of hospital in a day or two and physically recover, driving, working, etc., in a much shorter period of time.
And Professor Wilson, what are some of the advantages of robotic-assisted surgery over some other procedures?
The advantage of robotics over thoracoscopics is a 3D view with a much higher degree of freedom of movement of the instruments. So instead of having 3 degrees, you've got 7 degrees of instruments with wristed instruments inside the chest, and you're able to tease out and follow out arteries, veins, take specific node fields with far greater accuracy than you can with the thoracoscopic approach. So I think there's a accuracy, vision recognition, 3D imaging advantage to the robotics, which is unparalleled. Some of the newer robotics platforms coming out will utilize these advantages, but they're still in evolution. The sitting at a console remote from the patient when you've got somebody on a heart-lung machine and you've got a number of other assistants does increase the complexity of the procedure significantly. And that's one of the things that few other specialties have to deal with. So often they've got a stable target. They're not trying to sew an artery to a moving heart or then arrest the heart, put the heart on a heart-lung machine and then dock a robot. So it is a far more complex interaction between the various different supports you need, from anesthesia, perfusion, machinery with a heart-lung machine, making sure that your operation is done in a timely fashion and the heart's not left arrested for too long so that you actually cause damage.
And Professor Wilson, for doctors listening to this podcast who may not be aware, what are some of the 3D views of the heart that you can now access?
We are getting better and better views of the heart with the 3D imaging. You actually got a camera inside the heart. You can see all the structures you need to address there, the mitral apparatus, the cords. You can put Gore-Tex sutures in to replace cords. You can then replace the valve or repair it, put an annuloplasty ring down there, and also exclude the regions of the heart where clots tend to form and strokes are most common from. So it has the advantage of not just dealing with one problem, but you can actually address a multitude of issues through the one procedure. Robotics will continue to expand. And as we get better at integrating all of these different complex areas, its role will continue to grow.
And let's return now to urology and Professor Gillett. Professor Gillett, what procedures are performed robotically for both men and women from the perspective of your specialty?
Well, until recently, fairly recently, the majority of procedures on the Da Vinci and the other platforms that are appearing were going to be radical prostatectomy for men with early prostate cancer. That's, I guess, where it was developed in the US originally and most other Western countries over the last decade and a half or so. Increasingly so, kidney surgery in my specialty, to take kidney tumours out without necessarily having to remove the whole kidney, just take part of the kidney away. And preserve function as well as getting rid of the cancers in those cases. Removal of the bladder for bladder cancer in a smaller number of people. So that's my specialty, urology. It would be mostly prostate surgery, which was the original main focus of robotic surgery. Increasingly so, gynecologists are using it, however, for hysterectomies and other gynecological procedures. Incontinence operations in urology and gynecology in women to help strengthen the bladder neck and reduce their urinary leakage. And in general surgery, bowel surgery, a number of things, removing bits of colon for cancer, removing bits of the liver for cancer, and many other even more complicated procedures such as bariatric surgery or even pancreatic surgery. And a smaller number of cases are thoracic and cardiac colleagues are using it to remove lung cancers in thoracic surgery and to help at least part of the operation in some cases when doing coronary artery bypass graft, for example. They're using it to mobilize the blood vessels in the chest that will be used for the bypass. So it's increasingly finding areas that it will, I believe, increasingly do so over the next number of years, decade or two. I think it's an exciting time to be in surgery. It's been an exciting time over the last few years for me, but there's going to be a further shift in technology, I'm pretty sure, over the next decade or so. You can only imagine where robotic-type surgery might go. If you ever, you won't be old enough, if you ever saw Fantastic Voyage and were injecting mini submarines into people, well, yeah, similar things have been suggested. So there's a whole raft of things that might change in medical technology over the next few years. And this is one step on the way. I mean, the other exciting thing is you can actually link this technology with modern imaging, for example, MRI scanning, PET scanning, other sorts of taking pictures of people's disease, their insides, and making sure you can then carefully, precisely, and accurately attack the tumor using the robotic technology by linking it to the imaging technology we also have seen great strides in over the last few decades.
It sounds like both of you have seen so many changes in your careers. Professor Wilson, let me finish by asking you this. How much of a privilege has it been to have seen all these changes in your career and to have been on the front line of implementing them and saving lives?
It's an interesting journey. We started off with some patients needing open heart surgeries, waiting in hospital for 3 to 4 weeks and a high mortality on the waiting list. Stenting and the sutureless valves and transcatheter aortic valves means that there's a far greater role for minimally invasive technology across the board, coronaries, valves, and lung surgery. With the complexity of all of this, we now see a much bigger team approach where you have the options of a collaboration between interventionalists and surgeons, be they respiratory or cardiology, so that you're actually making the best decision for each patient on a evidence-based platform. I think the robotics will give us an extension of that evidence base into identifying the anatomy and the specific issues ongoing, so an augmented reality as well as a multidisciplinary approach will actually mean that you get the best of all options available and you have the best decision-making process for that patient. I think the miniaturization of instruments is going to be ongoing, and I could see in the future that you may have a robot inside the heart with the heart still working, miniaturized using echo guidance technologies to interact with the structures of the heart and using a combined interventionalist surgical approach. So I don't see surgery as being obsolete, but it has to evolve, become more technologically advanced and minimally invasive to continue to improve outcomes for patients.
Professor David Gillett and Professor Michael Wilson, thank you both so much for joining me today.
No problem. Thank you for doing it. Thank you.
No, thank you for the opportunity, and it's great to be able to talk about something that's a privilege to do.
My special guests have been Professor David Gillett, a specialist urological surgeon and the Director of Medical Services at Macquarie University Hospital, and Professor Michael Wilson, who is a specialist cardiothoracic surgeon also at Macquarie University Hospital, which sponsored this podcast. You can find more podcasts from the Medical Journal of Australia on our website at mja.com.au or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you very much for listening.